Michael Jordan's got you on speed dial.
I've got him blocked. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's bothered me too many times.
Well, I don't know why you haven't used that to your advantage.
I know. All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the sixth episode of Podcasts for Good. I feel like we're chugging along now. We've gotten some pretty awesome charities, pretty good guests, and we've experienced some pretty cool things during this time. We hope that people are paying attention, and if you're new to the podcast, just joining up, listening for the first time, welcome. I think we have lots of fun content for you. So I am Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager of the Combined Fund Drive, and this is, as always,
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
That's right, and we are your co-hostesses with the mostesses.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, that's pretty good, right?
Beetlejuice was a great movie.
Yeah. It was a great movie. I agree with you. At some point on this podcast, maybe today.
Michael Keaton? Let's get him.
No. We should get Michael Keaton for the podcast. I think that would be what they call a get in this particular industry.
I think so, yeah.
But I think at some point on this podcast, we need to go over top five movies of the 90s.
Oh, yeah?
I think that's important.
Oh, man, that's going to be hard.
And I know. Yeah. I don't know how we mix it in with whatever we're doing, but that's got to happen.
We'll find a way.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not going to actually talk to a movie director or actor today.
No.
In celebration of Caregivers Month, we're actually going to be talking to a couple of charities that deal with caregiving. So that should be pretty cool. I think there's lots of people. It's kind of a mysterious sort of talked about sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that it'll be fun to illuminate some of the information.
Yeah, I don't think if you're outside of any caregiver bubble where you are a caregiver or you know someone who's a caregiver, you don't know anything about it.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny too, because in doing some of the research and then even thinking to our personal experiences with caregivers in my family, like, it's funny how many people are touched in some way by a caregiver. They come into contact with a caregiver at some point in their lives, whether it be like in one of those sort of hospice care sort of places,
yeah,
or in home. So yeah, it's something that I think most people experience.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, everybody gets old.
Yeah.
So like, it's going to have to be
right
an experience you have.
Yeah.
But not only that, like, caregivers take care of people who have disabilities or developmental issues or even just people who are sick. So.
Yeah, totally. So let's talk about what a caregiver actually is.
Yeah.
You do it.
Okay. I will.
Give us the definition, Heather.
I do have a definition. Caregiver is a family member or paid helper who regularly looks after a child or a sick, elderly, or disabled person. So, what I just said. You like that? How I've got that memorized already?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Thank you, Google.
That's good. Nice job.
So, caregivers, they have a number of tasks that they do. So, most, like, when you think the word caregiver, it's personal care, right? So, you think about, like, somebody who helps out with bathing or dressing, eating, the word toileting, which, I mean, I'm assuming that means some
helping
kind of bathroom functions.
Yeah.
Exercise, medication reminders.
Yeah.
Then there's household tasks. So, if somebody isn't capable of, like, say, washing the dishes,
mm-hmm,
then
mm-hmm,
the caregiver in the home would do that.
Yeah.
And then companionship.
Yeah.
So, like, of course, that makes me think of, I think, a 90s movie.
Okay.
Yeah, a
90s
movie, actually. All right,
let's do it.
Happy Gilmore.
Oh, yeah.
When Happy Gilmore takes his grandmother to the facility because her house is gone, and Ben Stiller is a horrible, horrible human being,
You're in my world now, Grandma.
That's right.
Right.
So companionship would not be what Ben Stiller would have provided
in that case.
But
okay,
companionship is a big thing.
Let's just get it out on the table. We'll do a variation of our top five 90s movies.
Really?
Yeah, let's do it. Give me your top three favorite Ben Stiller movies and your three worst Ben Stiller movies.
Well, I never saw Zoolander 2s, but I've heard terrible things.
God awful.
Although it's not the 90s.
No, let's not go 90s.
Okay.
Let's just talk about his
career
in general.
So I'm just going to throw,
arc in general.
Ben Stiller, you're on like the hot sheet right now.
Yes.
Like, we're throwing you under the bus.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm going to say Zoolander 2 is probably one of the worst.
Yeah.
I did enjoy Tropic Thunder. That was surprising.
That was great.
That
I am putting my top three.
Yeah. I would say Zoolander is one of those ridiculous movies that you have to laugh at because it's stupid.
Yeah.
I dug it.
Okay.
And then there's this other movie that I think it has something to like called like a Personal Midnight or
Permanent Midnight?
Permanent Midnight, yeah.
Great movie.
That was a
great
movie.
Yeah, he was phenomenal in that movie.
He was. But like one of those things about that movie was just like he's addicted to heroin.
Yeah.
But he is such a health freak.
Yeah.
That he's going through, like, I'm having my wheatgrass shot now, and I'm exercising and running a million miles, but, you know, heroin.
I know,
like, what?
I know.
All right, okay.
I know. I feel like I would personally put Dodgeball in that somewhere.
Yeah.
And I might, going back to the 90s, I might put Reality Bites
in some place. I think Reality Bites was one of those movies where Ben Stiller didn't feel like he was comfortable quite yet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Yeah, but Dodgeball has a lot of great one-liners.
It has a lot of phenomenal one-liners. I mean, just the Globo Gym sort of thing is hilarious.
Nobody makes me feel my own blood.
One of the best lines ever. So, one of his, I guess, more forgettable roles apparently was as the world's worst caregiver.
Yeah.
A horrible example of a caregiver.
Yeah, horrible example.
In Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
Ben Stiller, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on sometime.
Yeah,
you
way to really nail that role.
Yeah, let's just talk about your filmography.
Yeah,
we'll be like inside the actor studio.
Yeah,
yeah, but that's just for the record, Ben. If you want to text me or call me, Michael, you still can't text me or call me. But Ben, feel free. Yeah, I mean caregivers.
Yeah.
I mean that makes sense. That's definitely a pretty solid definition of I think what most people think of a caregiver.
Yeah, exactly.
What about some stats related to caregivers?
I got that too.
All right,
go. So according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, caregiver jobs are going to grow 69% by 2020.
Oh wow!
And that's got a lot to do with baby boomers because you know people are getting older.
Yeah.
So there are going to be more people out there who are going to need care.
Yeah.
In Washington State, though, like if you talk about caregivers, there are like people who are like adult children or relatives who take care of somebody who's a relative, but then they also have paid caregivers.
Yeah.
So the union last year negotiated a $15 an hour by 2019 pay for anybody who is in the SEIU 775 as a caregiver. So per year, you know, depending on benefits, that's between like $28,000, $31,000.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the starting area.
Right.
So it's not a ton of money.
No.
Not
a ton of money.
So you don't have a lot of people who are just like itching to get into it for the pay.
Sure.
Like
sure.
They're doing it because...
Seems like it's passion work.
Exactly. Really. It is passion work.
Yeah.
So
I thought some of the statistics that I found were fairly interesting.
Yeah.
The majority of people who classify themselves as a caregiver take care of one adult.
Yeah.
82%. 15% take care of two adults.
Yeah.
You know, there seems to be a lot of stats out here
on
caregivers. Whereas we have dug into other subjects where I feel like you're digging.
Yeah, like I couldn't find the Hispanic population for Washington State.
Right.
Like, what is that?
Yeah, I mean, you're digging. This seemed to have lots of information right at your fingertips.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
The other one that I thought was really interesting, this was crazy. So this is why I think there's value in the charities that are in a program that deal with caregiving, especially if there are charities out there who offer up these sort of services at a low-cost rate or at a no-cost rate. This is as of 2013. The economic value, so that means the money saved when people used unpaid caregivers, so like what you would receive from a nonprofit, was $470 billion by families.
That's
that
crazy.
That was just in 2013. That almost matched the value of sales of Walmart.
That's
for
insane.
That year.
Is that countrywide, nationwide?
That is nationwide.
Okay. Because I did look up, too, like for Washington State, caregivers who are not paid, it's $10.6 billion.
That's insane!
Yeah, so a stat like that, like $10.6 billion, that's $10.6 billion that Medicare or a state program like taxpayer dollars doesn't have to pay for, but that is still like that's a need that has to happen.
Yes. Yeah, I mean just the economic value for Alzheimer's was $217 billion.
That's out of control.
Yeah. I mean it's shocking. It's the numbers on this are shocking, and like you said, it seems like you know with a growing elderly population,
it's
only going to be more and more of a need.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I was looking, too, at some statistics about Washington State caregivers, where there's this program called the National Family Caregiver Support Program. Mm-hmm. So people responded to a survey they did. Mm-hmm. So 61% of program participants are over the age of 60.
Wow.
So instead of retiring and doing whatever they had planned...
They're doing caregiving.
They're doing caregiving.
Wow.
And 24% of people ended their employment to take on caregiving responsibilities.
Wow. Now, do they classify caregivers as people taking care of their husbands and wives as well?
Yeah. So the National Family Caregiver Support Program, something that they report about people who responded in their surveys... 45% of caregivers report that their own health status is either fair, poor, or very poor.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not the ultimate. They definitely put themselves at, like, a, hey, I'm taking care of somebody, I'm doing this, and not taking care of myself.
Yeah. When we went up to the Alzheimer's Society of Washington in Bellingham to do the video that'll be on later in the campaign... One of the things they said, it's so funny you say that, one of the things they said is this overwhelming statistic, and I don't know the number off the top of my head, but a lot of times the actual caregiver of the Alzheimer's patient will pass away before the Alzheimer's patient. Yeah, because
that's
they don't
insane.
Take care of themselves.
Well, yeah, you think...
They're slaving over this other person that they want to make sure is okay.
Yeah, yeah. If you're supposed to be taking care of somebody, you want to make sure that they are taken care of, and then yourself,
It's crazy.
Yeah, and then 50% of these respondents also scored high on the depression scale. Mental health, like, nobody thinks.
Sense.
Like, you think more... Physical health is one of those things, like, you can see, you can feel immediately, like, if your foot is swollen, you feel that. You're going to be limping around all day. But if you're feeling suicidal, you may not recognize that until...
Creeps up on you.
Yeah, it creeps up on you. The money that is saved by people being in-home caregivers definitely helps families stay together.
Yeah.
And, of course, lessens the burden on other state programs.
Yes.
But it does something for relationships.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
So... I have fancy graphs that I will share.
Oh, my gosh. You have pie charts. People can't see this on the podcast.
But they will be able to look at them.
Oh!
Yeah, because I'm going to link that.
Oh!
So, for people who are taking care of somebody, like as an adult child taking care of a parent, the factor that determines who, like if you have three siblings or one sibling, the factor that's predominant for who's going to take care of that parent is just physical proximity.
Yeah.
So, if you live in Anacortes... Your family caregiver lives in Olympia, and your sibling lives in Spokane.
You're the one taking care of them.
You're it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then 43% of caregivers report receiving no help from their siblings. Not emotional, not financial, nothing. So they're really on their own. And then when asking sons and daughters, two questions. My relationships with my relatives have suffered as a result of my caregiving. My relationships with my friends have suffered as a result of my caregiving. Over 30%, 31, 33, 34, they all agree that that is absolutely true. My relationships suffer.
That's unfortunate.
It is sad, but you can see that as a caregiver, if you're taking care of somebody and you have to be there 24/7 to take care of them, you're not really going to be going out for ice cream with a friend or meeting up at a book club.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be doing those things as much anymore.
Yeah, I know. You're locked in, really, for that person until, until it's all over.
Absolutely.
So, Heather, hit us with the question of the podcast.
So this is more of a serious question than like, hey, doofus, what kind of animal would you be if you were born?
We're going to get all serious on us.
I know.
All right. Hit us with it anyway.
So, like, caregiving month is August, and the CFD is all about giving. So, what's the biggest or best reason to care about giving?
Yeah, this is a deeper question.
Yeah.
So, when I...
If you were a hot dog, would you eat yourself? I know I would.
Yeah. That's right, Will Ferrell. I kind of really think about it in terms of... I've always... I mean, you know me. I usually think about things in terms of the... Like the dad factor, like father to my kids, sort of stuff.
Sure.
And I always think about it like that. So we are living in heady times, man. We are talking about people who talk about fake news, and every opinion is like a dug in partisan opinion, and
We're not having a conversation about this because your opinion's not moving.
Yep.
Yeah.
We don't live. It feels like we have almost, even though we have all sorts of information at our fingertips, we've stopped living in an age of information.
Yeah.
Where sides just choose their side, and then they're entrenched, and that to me sometimes can take away from the human element of giving, of caring about your community. And so I think that's why that's important. So the one thing I always try to teach my kids is you're going to hear a lot of noise.
Yeah.
It's going to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that noise is angry because people are frustrated and all those sort of things. And with that anger comes apathy, you know, comes this sort of idea of like, well, like for those who think that nothing's going to change, so why do anything about it? Forget it, I'm not going to do anything. Or those who think, well, I'm not going to help because the wrong type of people will get the help.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. Like, that's why I think you have to care about giving. It has to have a human element, because if we don't do these things, if we don't do the base human stuff, like helping feed people, helping take care of people, giving money away because there's somebody who has none of it, then I really don't know what we're doing here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know what we would tell our kids, right?
Yeah.
So I think for me, that's the biggest reason, is to make sure that, you know, we are teaching our kids, teaching those younger than us, that like there are still people out there who of course they have opinions about subjects and they have opinions on politics and all those sort of things, but we're willing to get past those sort of things so we can make other people's lives better, I guess, is my main reason.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you'd mentioned apathy at one time. My dad had mentioned that apathy is like a form of death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
And, like, at the time, it was just like, oh, okay, sure, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, like, that's something that stuck with me. It's like, yeah, it truly is.
Yeah. It's that whole idea of, like, if you try and fail something, that's fine. Just try something.
Yeah.
Right? And if you can just do that, then you'll make it forward. I mean, obviously, it's a pretty passionate subject for me, because in the position we work, where we talk to people that really are sacrificing a lot, sometimes I just think, man, the least we can do is sacrifice some of our money.
Yeah, or something sacrifice like a little.
Sacrifice a little. Yeah. There are people out there who are making huge sacrifices in the name of a cause or a passion.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to interview two folks, as I said earlier. We're going to interview Shelley Willis. She's the Executive Director of the Family Education and Support Services. She's going to talk about program Kinship Care, which is a very cool program based here in Olympia. And then the second person we're going to talk to is a lady named Jenny Collins, who's the Executive Director of Visiting Nurses Foundation. So we're going to toss it to our interview with Shelley. And then we'll interview Jenny after that. So here they are. Okay, so we're here now with Shelley Willis, the Executive Director of the Family Education and Support Services. Shelley, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Family Education and Support Services are fairly well known here in Thurston County.
We're in Thurston, Lewis, Mason, and Pierce counties, this sort of South Puget Sound area of Washington State. And we provide a wide array of family strengthening services for the residents in those areas.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about the history of your organization?
We were founded in the year 2000, so this is our 17th year. And our goal has always been to help adults influence healthy child development. We do that in a wide array of providing services, intervention, prevention, and community-based programs.
Sure. Now, one of the ones that we were going to kind of talk a little bit about today was kinship care.
Sure.
So, yeah, can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, our agency has some evidence-based intervention programs when children are not able to live with their parents, bio parents, due to a number of issues: safety, incarceration, addiction, deployment, or due to immigration issues. The children are sometimes placed with relatives. Mm-hmm. By law, the state seeks out relatives first, and relative placement saves the state a tremendous amount of money. Foster care has some price to it, But the challenge for kinship caregivers is it's always a surprise. And unlike foster parents, they don't have the opportunity to plan ahead financially, physically, emotionally. Sometimes relative caregivers have to move out of their senior housing to accommodate a kid.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
In Washington State, over 46,000 children are currently living with a relative caregiver. And that doesn't include extended family like aunts, uncles, siblings.
Is it mostly like grandparents that end up?
46,000 are grandparents.
Grandparents.
And then we have additional relative caregivers, aunts, uncles.
Yeah. What's the most challenging thing a person who relies on your organization's services experiences? What are some of the things that come with somebody who is displaced, now has to find the state's now working with you guys to put them in contact? What do they usually experience? What are some of the tough parts?
For relative caregivers, we actually did a study in 2002 across Washington State to find out what are the biggest needs of this marginalized population whose needs aren't otherwise met. Unlike foster parents, there aren't predestined trainings that you take to get certified. There's not a caseworker to help you manage visitation with your kids. And often relative caregivers are battling with their own children for the safe and well-being of these children.
Yeah.
So they may not be prepared to address some of the trauma the kids are being impacted by, and sometimes they have to choose the welfare of their child or their grandchild over their bio parent who's also related to them. So there's the stress of having to advocate for a child on behalf of someone you're related to. Financially, it's not something that they plan to spend their retirement. Grandparents didn't plan to go back to work or to need to pay for child care or to accommodate therapy for the kids in their care, because these kids don't go live with grandma because something went well.
There was
a challenge that occurred for them, and they're doing their best to accommodate the kids' needs, and sometimes it's housing. Almost always there's a legal custody need, so there's some funding that has to go to certify placement. And then there's the physical, tangible, direct needs like needing a new bed and clothing or diapers. And did this child arrive with allergies? So finding a physician and accessing medical coverage and all the details any parent would need to address. But they don't come with instructions, and now sometimes they're already 8 years of age or 14 years of age. Sometimes the caregivers didn't even know they had a grandchild, and a CPS worker called them and said, did you know you had a child? And if you can't take them today, we'll put them in foster care.
Wow. So they have to make a decision pretty much right away.
Emergent decision, always in the best interest of a child, sometimes a safety issue, sometimes traveling for miles to just pick up a child and then bring them back home again. So they come to us, and we have staff we call kinship navigators. There's kinship navigators located across Washington State in regional areas, and just recently this year, thanks to the legislature, we have a tribal kinship navigator.
Oh, nice.
It's real exciting. And we assess what the emergent needs are of these relative caregivers and try to do our best to stabilize the placement.
So you mentioned that two specific things about like why a grandparent would become a caregiver. You said deployment and addiction. And like, we know addiction is a big thing in the news right now, and there's an opioid epidemic. But then like, we are physically close to military bases, so we have a lot of military members in the area. But what's the biggest reason that grandparents become a primary caregiver for a grandchild?
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of heroin addiction. Opioid addiction is there, but heroin addiction is very high right now. And mental unwellness, mental illness. So not only addiction, but co-occurring disorders. Immigration issues have certainly high rocketed this year. And deployment. Deployment issues, not so much as the family members leaving, but the return of the soldiers, and a lot of tension and stress and anxiety. And the parents dealing with PTSD and just not able to parent at this time, or having some mental health issues they need to work through before they can parent.
So before they, like, if they don't get certain services or care to take care of what they're experiencing after coming home, there needs to be like a stopgap.
So we've been doing a lot of trauma-informed training for the relative caregivers, for the parents, and for the kids.
Have
you guys ever seen some of these situations all the way through? How many times is the child able to go back into a home that they had to leave? And do you see success rates in that?
We do. Reunification is certainly a goal. Grandparents are also happy to have the parent become stabilized and able to parent. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't plan to spend their retirement that way, and they're always excited. It is a transition for the kid, the grandparent, and the parent, mm-hmm. but it's always exciting when that happens. And what our goal is to promote resilience and help families move from that unstable, unsafe place to a more resilient, consistent environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
We offer not only our kinship navigators, who basically case manage caregivers and kids into stability, we have support groups that meet every week in each of those counties, and we have a little bit of funding through the state that allows us to provide emergent one-time funding. We call it direct service money. So it pays for diapers or mm-hmm. Some brief mental health support mm-hmm. or transportation. I had one grandmother who wanted to keep the child in the same school, and so was driving an hour and a half to take the child to school every day. And it was such a cost for her in terms of fuel. She couldn't afford the back and forth twice, so she waited in the parking lot till school was over every day. And then drove the child home. So she was doing this. When she finally found us, we were able to work with the school and something called McKinney-Vento and help find transportation. So that was a big relief for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure that also kept like stability for that child so they could stay in the community they were
in. So much better for this child to maintain that safe environment, connection with peers, but also school members she trusted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And such a relief for the grandparent to not make that trek.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I bet.
Absolutely.
So what do donations do for your organization?
They help us stabilize and leverage funding. Mm-hmm. So we have some funding we receive from the state, a small contract, and we leverage private donations and community foundation support. And combined fund drive has been a tremendous support for us because it also leverages grant and local giving. We couldn't do it without them. We couldn't provide the support groups or the emergency care at the level we do now. We currently, as I said, for over 44,000 kids in relative care, and they need support now. They can't wait till we get the grant. They need to have school closed today and medication today and counseling, all the things they need to survive and be resilient.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Excellent. Do you have any events coming up that you want to highlight?
I am so glad you asked.
Hey, look at that.
You know, resilience doesn't mean that children get over an issue, but it does mean that the adults in their life can help buffer some of the trauma that happens to them. And we're very excited this October to bring in a speaker named Liz Murray. Mm-hmm. She's a TED Talk speaker, and she's written a book called Breaking Dawn. And that book and her life was recently made into a Lifetime movie called Homeless to Harbor.
Oh, wow.
And she will be speaking about resilience on October 25th at the Washington Center for Performing Arts. Tickets are available through the Washington Center for $25, and every ticket purchased will allow the purchaser to contribute to our kinship support program.
Nice.
That is cool. Mm-hmm. That is excellent.
And you will leave not only knowing you did better for the community, but you'll find some inspiration through this valuable speaker.
Yeah.
Right on.
Fabulous.
I hope you'll come.
Yeah, that's awesome. Absolutely. Well, Shelley, thank you very much for coming and talking about the Family Education and Support Services, and in particular, kinship care.
I thank you. Thank you for having this opportunity, and thanks to all of you who donate to the Combined Fund Drive. Our community wouldn't be the same without you.
Awesome. Thanks. If you're a donor who qualifies for retirement, we have a change in policy that may affect you. Starting on October 1st, 2017, the CFD is adopting a new policy that automatically continues any recurring payroll contributions current state employees may have into their retirement. Retiring donors will be able to cancel, add, or modify any donations before their separation date or any time during their retirement through the CFD online system or even by contacting the state CFD office and making a request with one of our staff members. If you have any questions about this new policy, we urge you to please contact the state CFD office at 360-902-4162 or email us anytime at cfd@sos.wa.gov. Again, this change is for donors who are qualifying for retirement. We really appreciate your patience in this matter, and hopefully you'll continue giving to us. Thanks a lot. Okay, so here we are with Jenny Collins, the Executive Director of the Visiting Nurses Foundation. Jenny, thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Why don't you take a second to tell us a little bit about the history of the organization for visiting nurses?
Okay, well, it's kind of an interesting history. We received our IRS designated 501c3 letter in 1991. And we started with some cars, and they were all the same color, and they drove around Lewis County providing care for people who had home health patients at home that needed help, and hospice patients. So we called ourselves the Visiting Nurses, and it stuck for a really long time. To this day, people will still say, oh, you're the ladies that drive around in the cars. Well, it's kind of evolved since then. Back then, we had a few grants and a couple of things that kept us going. Mm-hmm. Shortly thereafter, we figured out we quickly needed to come up with a way to fund our programs. So, of all things, we had a bingo hall in Chehalis, Washington, before tribal casinos kind of hit our area, and we were wildly successful. Fundraising-wise.
Nice. Amazing.
So that went really well for us for many years and provided a lot of services to our community and surrounding Greater Lewis County area. Mm-hmm. And then the climate changed, and it really wasn't working for us. We had a flood there, and gaming changed, per se.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So we had some really great ladies that ran our organization, and they decided to start a thrift store.
Nice.
And that thrift store has evolved into 10,000 square feet and three locations. Mm. And our thrift store income to help provide for services grosses almost $1 million a year.
Wow, that's great.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
That's
so
excellent.
That is very helpful in providing services to our community.
Yeah.
And we also do fundraising. We have an annual golf tournament and a Tree of Life.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
For people who have lost their loved ones right around the holidays, and a few other, we do a Veterans Tree of Life, etc. So that's in a nutshell. Of course, there were some bumps and bruises and some great successes along the way, but that's a quick snapshot.
Sure.
Right on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you're predominantly Lewis County based?
We are in 8 counties.
Okay.
We're in Lewis, Thurston, Clallam, Mason, Jefferson, Grant, Lincoln, and Adams County.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right. I know. I always worry I'm going to forget one, but I think that was all of them.
Yeah, counting them off on your
fingers. Like 1, 2, 3, you know, like when you're,
So what does your organization currently do for the community and for caregiving?
We have a comfort therapy program, and for every patient that goes on to hospice, they can receive as many comfort therapies as they need. And the best way for me to relate how that works in a family is for me to tell you my story. My mom received a cancer diagnosis about 6 years ago. Within 8 months, it was time to put her on hospice. And as painful as that was, it was something we needed to do.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we brought her home, and suddenly we were, you know, I was put in the position of not being the executive director.
Right.
I was the caregiver and the recipient of that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think we don't understand about hospice care is that once you bring your family member home, there are some things that happen. You know, they have pain, there's grief, there's anxiety, and those things aren't fixed with medication necessarily.
Yeah.
In our particular case, my mom was allergic to almost every kind of painkiller, reliever out there.
Wow.
So she had to have them because she was in horrible pain.
Sure.
But it would do a couple of things. It would either just make her go to sleep where she couldn't interact at all, or it would create like hives and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she was very uncomfortable. So we provide comfort therapy so that people can have an alternative to giving large amounts pain medication to their family. So my mom, quite frankly, was kind of thrashing about. She was very uncomfortable, and we brought our comfort therapist in. She provided a therapy for her. That's several different things. It could be for any family. It could be, for instance, a pet therapy or music therapy. We have a harpist. In this, it was more of a physical touch therapy.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And they provided that for her, and she slept for 8 hours.
Wow.
So yeah. What that did for us as a family is it gave us comfort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you can do that, you know, you're taking care of the patient while you're taking care of the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because what they're feeling is so much pain and grief and anxiety.
Right. A different kind of pain, yeah.
A different kind of pain.
Yeah.
So we provide those services, mm-hmm. and anybody who is on Assured Hospice can receive those for free.
Awesome.
Nice.
And that's not something, obviously, our insurance
system
covers, so we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
Another program that we just started this year is a respite program for caregivers.
Okay.
And it's in its infancy, but it's working, so we're really mm-hmm. excited.
Yeah.
So your social worker or your hospice nurse or your caregiver can fill out a grant application, and we will send a certified RN to your home to take care of your family member.
Wow.
So that you can have reprieve.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest with you, if you just tell me you want to write your grant and just say, I really want to see my son play a baseball game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then I can't, because I can't leave my family member alone.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or I need to attend to my own doctor's appointments, or go to the grocery store, or go for a drive and cry, whatever that is.
Yeah.
But when you can give them the relief that there is somebody who can take care of their needs should things take a turn for the worse, or if there's a situation that arises. We're really proud of that program.
Yeah.
And it's doing great. It makes people really, really happy. And when you can make people happy during that time,
it
feels good. And then the other program I thought I'd talk about, and we're really, really proud of it, because one of the things about having the thrift store is that people would donate, for instance, their walkers, wheelchairs, crutches. And when I'd walk through the store and I would see them on the floor, and even though they might be $4.99 and the regular retail price might have been $100, it never felt right to me that we were turning around and selling those items. So I put together a business plan, and I presented it to my board it's been a little over 4 years ago, and we opened our first free medical exchange bank.
Wow. Oh, that's cool.
Yes, it was really exciting. It started in November of that year, and to date, we have 3 free medical equipment banks. And we've loaned out over 8,000 items to the communities in which we serve through the medical equipment bank. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And it's funny how it works, because, you know, we just give it for free.
Yeah.
People are shocked.
Do people
like,
ever
what?
Go? Yeah, do people
nothing's
like,
ever
oh,
free.
I'm sorry. What are you saying?
So you want something for this, right?
Yes. And they're like,
they feel
nothing's
totally
ever really free, right?
I'm like, did no, I just give you something?
Yeah,
really?
Like, I got to give you something. I have to.
And the beauty of it is that it's a loan bank. So they can bring that item back when they no longer need it.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And it can go right back out. So they have a way to give back to the community.
Yeah.
And we do receive donations through that. People are very generous when they've been blessed.
Oh, definitely. It would seem absolutely. Yeah. You see that happen all the time. People receive a service or something like that, and they end up being your biggest evangelizers, if you will. Right?
That's right. Yeah. It's amazing. It's funny when we'll get tagged in a post. You know, social media can be really, really helpful. So, and or someone will say, if anyone knows where, you know, I need to pick up my dad from the hospital. It turns out I can't take him until I have a front two-wheeled walker. It's something very specific.
Yeah.
And go to the visiting nurses, they'll loan it to you, and you can keep it as long as you want, bring it back when you're done.
That's cool.
So that's cool. Very fun and exciting, and it's busy. And because we run them out of our thrift stores, and we utilize our thrift store employees who are trained to do medical equipment, we're open 7 days a week. So there's no place in Lewis County and some of the other counties that we serve through our medical equipment bank where you can get medical equipment 7 days a week. So that's pretty exciting.
Cool.
Nice.
Cool.
Another thing we do that, I can't find the exact right way to say it, but
We do funeral relief.
Oh, sure. Okay. Sure.
So many times at the end of life, people are kind of tapped.
Yeah.
And those caregivers are tapped not only emotionally or physically, but also sometimes monetarily. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And we provide some relief that way by providing some help towards a funeral. Okay.
Like financial assistance?
Financial assistance, okay. Yes. So yeah. Usually those requests come through a social worker or caregiver or the hospice nurse saying, this is a family that is in need.
Yeah.
And they need our help. And sometimes it's that last thing
that
gives that family relief. And it's interesting how all of this works. But because we do some of this relief stuff, and it may not just be a funeral, it could be a electric bill. Mm-hmm. We've even done some make-a-wish type things.
Sure.
We had a family recently and the father was killed in a farming accident and there were four children.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mother found out that she was stage 4 ovarian cancer.
Holy cow.
About a year later. And they didn't have any family in the area.
Yeah.
And had she passed in our area, her children would have gone into the system.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
You know, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we had the opportunity to work with the local cancer society and put together funds to fly them to Denver to meet with family. And it's a miracle how that works. But when you take the relief off of a parent who has something that's mm-hmm. left to be done on this earth,
mm-hmm.
it just gave me chills.
Mm-hmm.
Just now.
Yeah.
But she passed within 3 days of us getting her and her children to Denver to be with that family.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing how people hang on to make sure that, you know, whatever their last things are get done. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You hit on a word that I think is it gets used every once in a while, and that's the system.
Yeah.
So over the last, like, oh, shoot, it's got to be like 20 years now, we in this country have tried as hard as we can to varying degrees of success to deal with healthcare issues. And it seems like a lot of times the statistics are pretty overwhelming. The older you get, obviously, the more your needs increase. What have you seen change in the healthcare industry, like with the stuff like the ACA and that sort of stuff? Do you think that the system has done a better job of providing things for folks like you who are in the nursing industry, or do you think there's still work to be done?
Well, that question is twofold. On the hospice side, when you put a family member on hospice, there's a lot of help there. For instance, my mother was passing at St. Peter's when we decided we would stop any kind of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we were able to get her out of the hospital in the car and drive to Centralia, from Olympia to Centralia, they were at my parents' house with the bed, the commode, all of the things that you need, and a nurse was there to do their assessment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, this system's working well.
Yeah.
That was great. That felt good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think there have been a lot of improvements.
Yeah.
Because, I think the average hospice stay right now is between 10 and 12 days. If we went back about 10 or 12 years, it was less than 3.
Wow.
Which really isn't enough.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to take your family member home,
mm-hmm.
You want it to be a little more smooth. And it doesn't feel smooth in a 3-day process.
Sure.
Yeah, you need time to do that.
You do.
Yeah.
But another area where I feel like we're falling short, mm-hmm. since we're going to go to both sides of that, and there are some deficiencies, certainly, in the hospice side. But on the other side, if you are not a hospice patient,
mm-hmm.
and you are considered a home health patient,
mm-hmm.
to get equipment, needed home safety, durable medical equipment,
mm-hmm.
is about 18 months.
Whoa.
Wow.
So you have a family member who doesn't feel safe getting in and out of the shower, in and out of the bathtub. And I know we think we'll never get to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually just fell in my bathtub just by accident getting in and out. You know, you slip, you slide.
Sure.
And if when people don't feel that they can do their basic daily functions,
right,
like getting clean,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
it takes away from their quality of life in a way that we don't understand because we're not there yet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that is an area where we are lacking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and if you have to wait 18 months just to have something installed that makes everyday functions easier.
Yes.
That would be a tremendous punch to the gut for
daily emotional burden.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Daily living. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's why we work with the Area Agency on Aging. That's why we work with the local hospice agencies. We have two kind of in this area, and with the caregiving agencies as well.
Yeah.
And where we fill that gap, and it was a huge gap. I had no idea until we started was with the loaning of the medical equipment.
Right, that seems a big
the
deal.
The safety bars, the bath and shower transfer chairs, just, you know,
little
a walker,
things.
Little things.
Yep. Yeah.
Being able to become mobile again, to be able to go somewhere is just amazing. So that's an area where we're deficient, but I think it's an area where we've filled the gap in our...
Awesome.
In our counties.
Nice.
What kind of support does a caregiver need in order to be a good caregiver?
Wow, that's a hard question.
Way to go, Philip.
I know. Ooh, well, there's emotional support that they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think until you're a caregiver, you don't understand the strain that it puts on you 24/7.
Right.
So the respite, being able to take a rest from that, and making sure there's somebody who's qualified that can take care of your loved one, that's something I think that is really important. But the emotional, physical stress is just beyond.
Yeah.
It never stops. A really, really nice man just donated a transport van to the visiting nurses with a wheelchair and a lift.
Awesome.
Which is going to completely change somebody's life, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we're
just
going to pass it right on through to somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we're really excited. We've been doing all our little Facebook posts and this and that. But we talked a lot. His wife, he's been a caregiver for his wife for about 6 years. And he really just had this way of coming across to me that made me remember what it was like to slowly watch a family member either die or just get to the point that they're incapacitated.
Yeah.
They depend on you for their every move.
Yeah.
I think that's really important, the education, so you know what you're in for. And then being there for the emotional, physical, and sometimes even monetarily.
Yeah.
So as far as donations go, like what, like you have donations that obviously would be more like we're buying something at your thrift store.
Absolutely.
But
yes.
What do donations do for Visiting Nurses Foundation?
Well, we're in a really fortunate position. Our thrift stores pay all administrative costs.
Very nice.
Oh, spectacular.
Mm-hmm. So when you give a donation to Visiting Nurses, if you donate $20, $20 goes straight back out to whatever program you tell me to.
Right on.
Sweet.
To put it towards. That is the best thing I could ever say.
Yeah.
Because I know how, what a challenge it is to be an executive director of a nonprofit.
Yeah. Right.
There are a lot of challenges.
Right.
And you're always worried about your admin costs.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Our thrift stores cover our admin costs plus pay for a lot of our services.
That's great.
So I'm really proud to be able to say that as an organization. And it's pretty easy to donate to us.
Yeah.
You know, through our website, you know, attend our events, shop our thrift stores, donate to our thrift stores.
Right.
If you have some durable medical equipment that you think we could use, please.
Yeah, excellent.
Please do that. I did want to tell you one little, I know I'm probably going off subject,
but
I'm just
going
to do it.
She's
I got the glasses
the glass.
On.
Serious business.
Not good. since 2007, that was when we first started conceptualizing our comfort therapy program.
Uh-huh. Right.
And it really didn't get going until 2012. We have actually provided over 10,000 comfort therapy visits.
Okay.
Wow.
At an average cost of about $55. The ripple effect, it's really hard to understand how effective you are until you meet people after the fact. And you know, I always say I had the perfect hospice experience with my mom. So it wasn't great. Of course, I'm losing my mom, but everything went exactly how I thought it should. And when I hear that back from somebody who's received services from us, it makes me feel really proud.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
that is
awesome.
Super cool.
Yeah.
So do you have any like upcoming events or anything you'd like to share that you guys are putting on?
Yeah. In December, we have our Celebration of Life that we do.
where we have a Tree of Life at the Veterans Memorial Museum in Centralia.
Okay,
cool. And we provide a non-denominational service, mm-hmm. and we make really beautiful ornaments for every single family or hospice patients that let us know they want us to hang an ornament for them. And it's, we get a lot of support in our community from a lot of people attending. It's usually really beautiful. We usually have our harpists there.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
It's great. So we have that coming up. It's the second weekend in December.
Uh-huh.
We just finished our golf tournament and we had a record year. Our income for that event was $53,000. That's pretty good for a golf tournament in this county.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah. So we worked hard for every little penny of that one.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent, nice. Excellent.
Awesome. I love that you have a harpist.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, you're just like, well, yeah, we have a harpist, you know, no big deal.
Well, we do, but you know, and I'm going to, because I know we're probably finishing up, mm-hmm. but I do want to tell you one really quick story about the harpist.
Sure.
But we have a little boy who was born with a seizure disorder because, you know, people always think hospice is about mm-hmm. the elderly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's really deeper than that. Yeah. And he is about 18 months, and he was born with a seizure disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the seizure disorder, he doesn't really see, and he doesn't hear very well at all.
Right.
And he has a lot of discomfort because he sees us a lot.
Okay.
Well, we sent our harpist in and did comfort therapy, several comfort mm-hmm. therapy visits, and we have, like, the most lovely video you've ever seen mm-hmm. of him having pure joy on his... just pure joy, just his hands just flailing about like it's the best thing.
Yeah.
But with harp, you feel vibrations as well.
Sure.
So if you don't hear all of the music, there's more to it than that.
Uh-huh.
And music therapy cannot be underrated.
Yeah.
Neither can pet therapy.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
if you've ever had a bad day and went home and petted your dog or your cat, don't tell me that doesn't make your blood pressure better like that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Jenny Collins, thank you so much for coming and talking a little bit about
thank
the Visiting Nurses Foundation. It was really a pleasure to meet you and talk to you.
Well, I'm honored to be here.
Awesome.
Thank you for letting me talk about what keeps me going during the week. So,
awesome.
Thank you.
Okay, so those were our two interviews with Shelley Willis from the Family and Education Support Services, and then Jenny Collins from Visiting Nurses Foundation. First impressions, what'd you think?
Well, one thing about podcasts that we do that it does blow my mind every single time is, yeah, you can go on somebody's website.
Yeah.
You can look at, you know, hey, this is who you are, this is what you do, this mm-hmm. is where you started.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, these are programs that you run. That's cool. But, like, hearing the both of these women talk about programs, like Kinship Care, and then the medical equipment. The
Medical Exchange Bank.
That is incredible.
That's an unbelievable thing.
So, like, learning about things like that.
Yep.
I have people in my life who have had medical equipment, and I was like, oh, I know where to take it now.
I think about it every time we do one of these podcasts, and I don't think that there's going to be something that personally connects with these people. It absolutely happens. So the minute we started talking to Shelley Willis, I thought about my friend and his kids who've gone through a really tough time
uh-huh.
with the mental disability of his now ex-wife.
Yeah.
And all the challenges that came with that.
Yeah.
And then the minute we started talking to Jenny Collins, I thought about my mother-in-law, who was an absolute saint.
Yeah.
And going through hospice care.
Yeah.
It's so amazing because you don't even like think about that stuff when you come in, and then all of a sudden they say something or they talk
and
about
it
something
triggers
and evokes
something.
This sort of personal,
mm-hmm. yeah.
personal reaction. The Medical Exchange Bank that they were talking about with the Visiting Nurses Foundation—that's
phenomenal.
It's about the most one of the coolest things I've ever heard.
Yeah.
It makes me want to go just to see what it looks like.
Exactly. Yeah.
What I hope people like about what our podcasts are about is that we are not afraid to talk about an issue, but talk about it in a different way.
Sure.
That's not shouting people down.
Yeah.
What I liked about these two ladies was these bigger issues that you hear about.
Yeah.
Like, they end up boiling down to these very sort of personal, local issues. So the two that I thought were really interesting was when we talked to Jenny about the healthcare environment.
Sure.
I mean, this is a debate that's been going on since, like, Bill Clinton was president.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And he gave it a shot.
Yeah.
And Bush after him and Obama and, you know, now even the conversation that happens today.
Yeah.
That it always tends to feel like this sort of more like infotainment sort of conversation. Like, we're not actually talking about something real.
Yeah.
To hear her talk about it, though, where some things are great now because of changes, and some things still need work.
Yeah.
It just brings it down to this very simple level. The other one was Shelley Willis talking about opioid addiction and immigration.
Yeah.
And how those two are the biggest impact on families. That's like the three heavy hitters in the news today, but they're talking about it in these sort of like lofty, like you don't really know what it has to do with you.
Uh-huh.
You know, sort of things, and to have them talk about it in sort of plain terms, I thought was cool.
Well, also, like, thinking about your parents, right? At some point, you could be a primary caregiver for your parents.
Absolutely.
Any of us, you know?
Absolutely.
So, knowing that there are services like this out there right now, while both of our parents are, like, walking around, living life, having jobs, and still functioning just as regular people without needing care like that. It's like, okay, so here's a service that I could rely on in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could need this.
I think my mom's planning on me doing that. She's already talked about it. You're going to have to be here and doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Mom. I appreciate it. Keep reminding me.
Well, I did tell my dad the second that he shows any signs of senility, home.
Right away, Dad.
And he was like, that's fair.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, I see it. I see it.
Yeah, I know you.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, my brother happened to be there at the time, and he was like, yeah, I agree.
Well, we have a consensus around the table.
Yep.
Moving on.
2-1, we win.
Yeah. So let's talk about some upcoming events.
Yeah.
So obviously, like we said, we are in the midst of Caregivers Month. That's why we did this. It's very cool. We have a ton of charities in the program that deal with caregiving, senior services, even children, youth, and family services has got some in there. So take a look. What we just last week ended the Froyo Eat Sweets and Give, August 14th through
18th. Froyo, what's that?
What's Froyo?
Froyo.
Shout out to Mark Neary.
Assistant Secretary of State Neary.
Secretary of State Neary. You know what? We'll give it. We'll see if he's listening to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. See if he understands that him not knowing what Froyo meant during a meeting is a capital offense, sir.
Yeah, and we will make fun of him for it forever.
We will. So now it's out there for all to hear. And we'll see if he listens to these podcasts.
We'll have a visit.
We will.
In a few days.
So that happened from 14th through the 18th. That was really fun. The ESD softball tournament, of course, is August 26th at Brandon Park in Auburn. The football ticket online auction will be running from the 28th through September 1st. We have 5 Seahawks games. We have a game to the Sounders with some swag.
Nice.
To the Sounders, we are looking into a game for the Rain, which is the female soccer club.
Yeah, out of Seattle.
Out of Seattle.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Apple Cup.
Yeah.
Which everybody loves.
So you've got football and handball.
Yes, football and handball.
Or football and football.
Football.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Golf for Veterans Tournament on September 16th. So those are just a couple of things that are coming up. We're entering into our campaign time here soon.
Yeah.
We're prepping, making the big preparations.
It's crazy that the campaign is right around the corner.
Cannot believe it's already around
the corner. Like, it's August. I can't get over that.
I know. It's nuts.
Yeah.
So those are just a couple of the events coming up. We do invite you to check out the calendar of events section on the CFE website, because we not only house our stuff on there, but charities also put their upcoming events as well.
Yeah, so if you're looking to do something on a weekend, there could be a fundraiser or a dinner or a golf tournament in your area.
As always, this was the CFD Podcasts for Good. I'm Philip Kerrigan, and that is Heather Lucas.
Yeah.
We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.